British Spy Stories, Season 2, The Kill Order. Episode 15. A watery blue sky lays across Belgrade as Gabby watches the traffic navigate the square in front of the hotel from her room on the fourth floor. The telephone warbles a gentle trill from the sideboard, and she picks up the receiver. Reception tell her that she has a guest, and he's waiting for her in the restaurant. She checks her watch. It's 11:34 a.m. The lift doors open onto the vast expanse of the public spaces that sit on the ground floor of the Square 9 Hotel, and she strides across the marble to the carpeted room that sits at the back of the building. Customers are dotted at tables drinking mostly coffee as Gabby scans the room and sees Babu sitting alone at the far end. She walks to him and Babu looks up, but only at the last moment before she arrives.
Fräulein, he says.
Mr. Babu?
She sits opposite him.
You made an impression last night.
His eyes have the slightest smile that she's ever seen. He's a man unsure if he should lighten the mood yet.
Good,
is all she says.
Darius is in a private hospital, says Babu. He needed an operation on his hand overnight.
Gabby says nothing, and the air hangs between them uncomfortably.
Your behavior doesn't help our cooperation, Erica.
She smiles sweetly.
No one fucks with me, Florin. He's lucky he got away with what he did.
She pauses to let in time between that idea and the next.
But I'm prepared to offer you an olive branch, so that we can continue our discussions, she says. Now that you know where I stand.
She looks up at him, and he raises his eyebrows.
You have a son, called Jacob. He'll be, what, 4 years old now?
Babu's features crease together.
How do you...
I know you don't see him. I know you haven't seen him recently, and I know you'd like to see him more. Even have him live here with you in Belgrade.
Babu is silent.
The mother, Irina Voroboyov, worked for you, didn't she?
Gabby's on a roll now.
Took the kid. Won't let you near him.
Babu's face is static as he tries to keep his passions in check.
You don't know where they are,
she continues.
Despite sending your guerrillas all over the old Soviet bloc to find them.
I'll find them soon, he says. I have two teams searching now.
I'm willing to find Jacob for you.
Only now does his face change. A fleeting sensation rolls out across his bone structure before he kills it.
How do I know that you have the capability to do that? He says.
You don't. You'll only know that when I walk in here with your son.
What do you want in return?
Half of your Belgrade operation. Everything. Bars, clubs, escorts, drugs.
He smiles. She waits.
Partners. And the introduction to your Berlin contacts, as we said yesterday.
She nods.
Some.
She can see his mind is already made up.
Do we have a deal, Florin?
He says nothing. Nor does he move. Babu sits in the chair, looking at her, for a full 30 seconds. Then leans forward and holds out his hand for Gabby to shake, which she does. She has no interest in prolonging the meeting, so makes her excuses with a promise to let Babu know how things progress. She returns to her room and dials an encrypted video call on her phone. Gabby walks to the window and sits down in an armchair, waiting for the call to connect. Hans looks flustered when his image appears on the screen.
Hang on, Gab,
he says, and she can see him going through the doors into the back rooms of the Met Bar, until he arrives in a small room and closes, then locks the door behind him.
It's soundproof in here.
I need you, Gordon.
Thank God. What's happening?
We need to locate a 4-year-old boy, she says.
Where?
I don't know.
Who is he?
Gordon's tone is cautious.
Babu's son. I've told him we'll find the boy and take him to Belgrade.
Gab, we don't do child kidnapping.
Did you hear what I said? That's what I've told him. It's not what we're going to do. I'm sending you the intel I have. Babu got one of his prostitutes pregnant. They may have had an affair, but she ran when she was 4 months gone. All we have on Oberon is that she is suspected of going to live with her mother, who lives in Minsk. The mother moved to Belarus when her husband died. She has a sister there.
I'm just reading the stuff you sent, says Gordon. What do you want from me?
Initially some cyber stuff, says Gabby. Run traces against her name, her family, registered cars, addresses, friends, anything you can find online to identify her. We need her movements, where she lives now, and any CCTV if you can.
Why not ask London for this, Gab? They've got more powerful algorithms and software that can do all of this far more easily than I can.
I want to keep this between us for now.
You made an agreement with Babu without London's sanction.
This is the field, Gordon. Stuff happens. Are you in, or do I need to find another resource?
I'm in, Gab. I'm in, he says. I'll get started and call you tomorrow.
I'm coming back anyway, she says.
They ring off. Gabby pulls out her case from the cupboard and starts to pack. The taxi drops off Marcus Murphy on Down Street in central London, and he walks around the corner and up the steps of the Cavalry and Guards Club. The doorman nods to him in recognition, and he heads straight for the bar, where he orders a double scotch, then finds a chair in an alcove that overlooks Piccadilly. He watches the traffic drift down along the top side of Green Park and start to hit the queues at Hyde Park Corner. He stares into the amber liquid in the glass in his hand. His thoughts are lost in the colour and the smell that he's been wanting all day. The shaking in his hand has stopped, and he feels calmer now. He thinks about that Morrison chap and how he is causing so much trouble. Why couldn't he just stay in the bloody safe house and bide his time? What's the bloody rush? Marcus doesn't rate Sir Bernard McIntosh, now that he is working directly for him. When Marcus was station chief in Berlin, Sir Bernard seemed more credible. But there had been Sir Stephen Lawton between them, so he was protected from the incompetence of the more senior man. Marcus needs to make sure that other people see Sir Bernard for what he is. An old school has-been. The man doesn't know about modern espionage. He's still caught up in Cold War thinking. It's all different now. Marcus's mind races through the options he has to expose Sir Bernard. Now that Sir Bernard has taken Operation Windfall from him, Marcus needs to ensure that it goes wrong. Then it will be seen as his boss's fault. Sir Bernard will be retired off somewhere, and Murphy can take his place. A steward approaches him and tells him that his guest has arrived. Marcus walks to the reception area and sees a tall, pretty young woman standing there. She smiles at him as he approaches.
Are you Marcus?
Her voice is velvety and her eyes are blue. He smiles at her.
I'm Lucy.
She kisses him on the cheek.
Rebecca's unwell, I'm afraid. I'm her stand-in.
He looks the woman up and down.
Won't you come through?
He says, and he leads her towards the dining room. Marcus looks at his watch. It's nearly 2 a.m. The moon is nearly black tonight, he notices. The light stretching across Green Park and highlighting the tops of the trees, but blotting out sight of the smaller ones. He has always liked these rooms at the Athenaeum Hotel, as they make him feel important. This is the life he wants all the time, not just occasionally. Lucy's breathing marks the passing of time in the bed behind him. Her clothes are mostly on a chair by the mirror, but her underwear is on the floor. She had been good, he thinks, He may ask for her next time. He had always asked for Rebecca before, but now he can see that Lucy is more elegant, more fitting for a man of his standing. He leans over and pours more scotch from a decanter that sits on a small, round, deep red mahogany table under one of the tall windows in the room. Lucy turns in the bed. He stops momentarily, but she doesn't wake. His mind goes back to his plans for Sir Bernard. How can he undermine Operation Windfall? Where is there something in the op that is known to some of the MI6 agents involved, but not all? In his mind, he goes through what Gabby and Laravel had written in their daily reports. Then he remembers. And he knows exactly what he'll do to make Sir Bernard look like an idiot. He gets dressed. He'll be back home in an hour. His wife won't have even noticed he's not there, probably shagging her tennis coach in some ghastly provincial hotel. He buttons his coat, reaches inside his jacket, pulls out £300 from a roll of cash, and places the notes carefully on the duvet. Then he goes downstairs, walks out to Piccadilly, and hails a cab.